From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Coyotes, raccoons, and foxes are synergizing. That's what researchers call the animal's adaptive behavior when the natural habitat shrinks due to urban development. A recent study out of Penn State shows white-tailed deer fawns have better chances of survival in mixed cover areas, a combination of agricultural or landscaped areas and forests, versus forests alone. In forests alone, the average survival to 6 months of age was about 41%. According to Science Daily, researchers say coyote predation was a greater source of mortality for the deer than black bears or bobcats, especially in the Southeast. In a separate study out of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, scientists found red foxes and coyotes are coming into close contact with one another. According to the Wisconsin Gazette, researchers found one instance where a coyote routinely visited a fox den over about a 2 or 3 week period. Scientists say the fox and kits did not abandon the den, which suggests they didn't feel threatened by the coyote. The disappearing hostility between the two species have implications for wildlife managers working to promote their coexistence. In New Hanover County, a randomized group of taxpayers are getting a survey now asking about whether they've seen coyotes and their attitudes towards them and perceptions of them. But whether you've seen coyotes or not, coyotes are here to stay, as are red foxes, white-tailed deer, and raccoons. Today, we're going to learn more about the synergization of these animals and whether humans need to start planning or changing their own behavior to coexist sustainably. Rachel Urbanek is a certified wildlife biologist and assistant professor of wildlife ecology in the Department of Environmental Sciences at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. She also serves as the advisor for the newly founded Seahawk Wildlife Society, which allows UNCW students to gain field experience, network with wildlife professionals, and learn about current wildlife conservation research. Rachel Urbanek, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Have you recently seen any surprising wild animals you didn't expect to see here? Tell us about your experience. Have you seen some animals make urban adjustments that you just didn't expect? You can call us on this Thursday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Rachel Urbanek, which animals are doing the most synergizing in the Cape Fear region, adapting to this more urban environment?
Yeah, so, you know, it's not just in New Hanover County or in Wilmington. It's across the United States. The same animals we see, depending on whatever city you're in. It's white-tailed deer, raccoons, possums, fox and coyotes are just, you know, some of the top ones that are doing a really good job about being able to make these changes. And what this whole process is of synergization is, you nailed it on the head in terms of these behavioral adaptations and changes to their new kind of landscape and surroundings.
Give us an example with, say, white-tailed deer. What behavioral changes do they undergo to adapt?
So white-tailed deer, in terms of the behavioral changes, may be taking in people's backyards more often. I know that there's probably plenty of listeners that say, yeah, my azaleas. You know, so that's a pretty common thing in terms of new feeding strategies. You know, we're landscaping our properties for things that we find aesthetically pleasing, but they happen to be tasty for animals as well. And so when we start kind of developing the lands and they lose their native habitat, they're finding alternative food sources. And so that's common of white-tailed deer, but that's common of every organism that is actually making it and doing well in urban areas.
Do some animals also change when they sleep? For instance, are there animals that normally would be out and about during the day, but they've become nocturnal because of urbanization?
you know, there's not huge shifts. They're not going from being all the way from being daytime animals to nighttime animals. But there are, most animals are shifting to being more nocturnal. So, for instance, deer are what we call crepuscular animals. They tend to be really common and active around dawn and dusk. You can see them any time of the day or night, but they seem to be usually really active during dawn or dusk. While that's still true, you're actually going to see more deer in more urban areas at night moving around because they're trying to avoid humans. And that's true of all the animals. You know, in terms of coyotes and fox, you can see them at any time of the day, but they are nocturnal animals naturally.
So then why are we seeing some of them during the day?
They're just out. They're out. Doesn't mean they're sick. That's always what most people usually jump to. You know, oh, I saw a raccoon during the middle of the day. It must have rabies. No, it generally probably doesn't. You know, any animal can be out during the day. And the way I like to usually tell people is, you know, humans, we are all, for the most part, daytime organisms, right? You know, except for those, you know, souls that have to work that third shift. So we're awake during the day, but how often do you find yourself getting up to get a drink of water in the middle of the night or to use the bathroom where you just can't sleep? It's the same thing for a nocturnal animal. They just, something might have disturbed them and they might have had to leave where they were resting, or something must have might have happened that made them get up, that maybe they needed to get some food, or maybe they just were restless and that we happened to just catch them when they were out and about during a time that they generally aren't.
Which species haven't done such a good job? I shouldn't put it that way. It sounds judgy. But which species are not really adapting?
Well, I could speak broadly for both plants and animals. A lot of our native species don't do as well. And so I just named a whole bunch of native species of fox and coyotes and raccoons, and I'm talking about native broadly towards the United States. But a lot of our native species in general don't do well with urbanization. What do well are species that aren't native to the area. So if we want to come down to just North Carolina and talk about native species that have been in North Carolina historically to species that maybe have been or that have been somewhere else in the United States and are relatively new in North Carolina. So those species would be coyotes and red foxes. Coyotes really didn't become established in North Carolina until the 1980s. Red foxes slowly had been around since Eastern Europeans came and settled. But before that, there were no red foxes. We did have gray fox, so that's our native canid or dog-like animal, and then we had the red wolves in northeastern North Carolina. And with our changing state, we are seeing a lot more coyotes and a lot more red fox that are not native to North Carolina, and we're seeing, or a lot of people think we're seeing, fewer gray fox. Now, whether or not we actually are seeing few less, that's actually a project I'm working on with the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission, is kind of trying to monitor long-term trends in our fox populations and our coyote populations.
So are there other species besides red wolves and possibly gray foxes, but we don't know yet? And I'm going to ask you to dive more deeply into that in a little while. But are there other mammals that are disappearing because of this explosive growth in the Cape Fear region?
You know, specifically in the Cape Fear region, I think we're still learning a lot. For wildlife managers and biologists, we're still learning in terms of how things are changing, because around the 1900s in the United States, most of our mammal species and our bird species across the entire United States were really in dwindled numbers. There was rampant market hunting. There was just no regulation or processes of what we have now. So now where we are 100 and some years later, we've done a fantastic job of restoring these populations. They're doing real well, but now they're fighting a different thing. They're fighting these changes in the landscape of lack of habitat. So in terms of specific mammal species, there's certainly smaller mammal species like flying squirrels that are at edges of their ranges or aren't finding good habitat anymore for specific trees that might not be doing as well in an urban environment. You know, some bat species do better in urban environments compared to rural environments, but some do better in rural than urban. You know, but the ones that
there's a lot we still have to quantify then. That's what you're saying. Like, is there a new focus on this among researchers in North Carolina?
There has been, so I say it's new in the realm of wildlife management, because wildlife management in North Carolina or in the United States has been around since the 1930s. But in terms of an urban aspect of it, really the last few decades has been more and more of a focus. And really the people that get into wanting to be a wildlife biologist, and I was the same way when I was an undergraduate at Penn State. I was like, I want to move out west. I want to be away from people. And then somewhere along the lines, I was like, no, I want to be an urban wildlife biologist. And I want to be working with people so that we can coexist and try to figure this out. And there's a lot of people going that way now. So there's still a lot of research that needs to be done. There's been a lot of fantastic research that has been done in the last two decades, but we still are kind of just scratching the surface.
So you've said, and we will get more into this as well, but you've said because of the urbanization of the country, there are more human wild animal interactions than there have been in the past. And you've characterized that as a negative thing.
It's not necessarily negative. I mean, I love seeing animals. So again, that kind of goes back to we have more animals now than we've had in the past 100 years because of bringing back these species, and we're in more enclosed areas. So I know I can talk to one set of my neighbors and they say, oh, I saw a coyote the other day. And then I can talk another set of neighbors that say, oh, if I see a coyote, I'm going to be upset. You know, so it depends on the person really in terms of whether they perceive that interaction as positive or negative.
We're going to unpack that a little more when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. It's a look at local wildlife, specifically mammals, and how some animal populations are adjusting to urban sprawl. When we come back from this break, we'll hear from Russell of Wilmington. If you have a question about the wild animals you've seen in your neighborhood, especially coyotes or foxes, tell us about it on this Thursday. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today we're taking a closer look at the way wild mammals are adjusting to urban growth and why we're starting to see coyotes in places we haven't seen them before. Our expert today is Rachel Urbanek. She's an assistant professor of wildlife ecology in UNCW's Environmental Sciences Department. She has launched a survey in New Hanover County to learn about local coyote sightings and public attitudes towards the animals. And we want to hear from you on this Thursday. Have you seen coyotes in your neighborhood? What about red or gray foxes? Do you have questions about the wild animals that you've seen around? You can call us on this Thursday at 910-343-1138 or email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Russell from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, how are you doing?
I
agree with Rachel, and I'm really glad that she's doing a study like that, and I have received stuff on it. And ironically, my fiance would say that I'm the perfect person to talk to because I've been talking about the subject for the last 3 months, and I'm an avid archer, and I'm an avid hunter, and also I teach stuff in the Scouts. But I've seen coyotes in the last 6 months. One I saw on Mohican Trail and one on down by Saunders Road. Last week, I did see a red fox, and I'm good at identifying it wasn't a gray fox, and a lot of times they're misidentified. Unusually, it was a red fox, and it was on Kelly Road, and that was just 3 days ago. And I just warn people that they not to try to supplement feed them. You know, that's not their natural thing to do. And if your trash is being broke into, it wouldn't be a coyote or a fox necessarily. and never to set a leg hold trap or do anything like that, because that's not the way to handle it, and that's not legal in New Hanover County.
Russell, you said you've been talking to your neighbors about this for years. What kinds of attitudes do your neighbors have when you say, "Hey, I saw a coyote in Wilmington"?
They're usually shocked, but I let them know that it's just they're building and they're taking out a lot of the habitat, so they're venturing further around. And I did immediately look up and saw about the research that was being done. I like to stay kind of, on the forefront, and I totally believe in, reporting anything you do, and letting people know, because the conservation has been incredible with wild turkey, in all 50 states. And it's not something to fear. It's just something to be aware of and just teach your kids about, if you see an animal and it's acting funny, of course, steer clear, and don't approach any wild animals, but, education is primary,
Right, which is what we're doing today. Russell, thank you so much for sharing your experience here. Rachel Urbanek, does it sound to you like Russell is doing all the right things in terms of human-animal encounters here?
Yeah, he actually gave some really great advice. Certainly, a lot of people think that when they see a wild animal, whether, it could be a coyote or a fox, but it could be something as simple as a squirrel, they think they're doing something good by putting food outside. And they don't need it. They really don't need it. They can find their own food. Even though I, was saying about how, these wild animals that are doing well in the urban areas, they're coming into your backyard to find that food. They can find other things in your backyard to eat than birdseed or dog food or things of that nature. And then another thing that he said was real true, too, is that if you see a wild animal, just admire it. I take a picture with your phone, look at it, call your friend up and say, "Hey, guess what I just saw?" But what you don't want to do is go chase it or try to touch it or anything of that sort. Just let it be.
Russell said that he was one of the people in New Hanover County of this randomized group that got one of your coyote surveys. Now, let's say that you get back a whole bunch of people saying, "Yes, I've seen coyotes and I don't like it. I think it's dangerous. I'm worried about what they're going to do to kids and small animals in the neighborhood." Is there an education opportunity there? I mean, what would you say to those people who react negatively towards just, "Oh, no, we need to get rid of them. They're in urban areas"?
Yeah, certainly. So actually, this study that I'm doing it with my colleague, Dr. Chris Dumas from, again, Environmental Sciences. And it's actually called a community engagement project. And so we have worked with the county commission. We've worked with Landfall. We've talked to a couple other places throughout Wilmington to find out what they've been hearing and feeling towards coyotes in particular. But our end goal was, after we get everything, is to try to do some public education. So part of that survey actually is trying to provide a baseline of, when people are seeing coyotes. There's actually 7 or 8 different interactions listed in there that, we want to say, "Have you seen a coyote doing this? Have you seen a coyote doing that?" So we can kind of get a baseline of, number one, where coyotes are in the county, but then what people's actual experiences are with them. And then with that, if there's any kind of misconceptions that coyotes are going to steal my children or anything of that sort, we can be able to target some good education. Now, the North Carolina Wildlife Resource Commission does a fantastic job about this. They actually have a coexisting with coyotes brochure, I think it is. And then, they have also been open to traveling to different places throughout the state to actually kind of work with communities to do that. So
that's something you might tailor based on the kinds of answers you get back in this survey.
Yeah, and certainly. And actually, I don't know if many people of our listeners know about it, but UNCW actually has a college day with our College of Arts and Sciences. It's in October. And so it's different faculty that kind of give lectures. And I'm actually giving a lecture this October on the results of this study. And so you can go to college for a day and be part of it, is learning kind of what are about our coyotes in New Hanover County.
You're listening to Coastline. We're looking at the cinnabization of wild mammals in the Cape Fear region, including coyotes. Answering your questions on this Thursday, Rachel Urbanek. She's a certified wildlife biologist. an assistant professor of wildlife ecology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. You can call us with your close encounters at 910-343-1138 or email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Jim writes, recently around 10 p.m. while driving up Chestnut Street near Burnt Mill Creek, this is in Wilmington, we saw a huge owl in the street feasting on something. It flew up and perched on a stop sign and stared at us until we left. We saw in the rearview mirror that it went back to whatever it was doing when we first saw it. 2 days later, I saw a hawk carrying a pretty big animal with a long tail flying. Is that somebody's cat flying low over Carr Avenue near Blue Clay around lunchtime? Does that sound like owl behavior, feasting in the street? That sounds like a vulture.
It does sound like a vulture. I'm not sure if I missed it in the email or if he said it, but I'd be interested to know what time of day it was.
He said around 10 p.m.
10 p.m.? Well, it's dark out, so at that time, and owls are nocturnal creatures, and so they'd be hunting at that time. So that is okay. He probably came around the corner on that owl after the owl had already found that prey item of whatever it was to eat. And so when he came around the corner in his car or bike or whatever mode of transportation he was at, he probably just interrupted that owl's dinner. And so it wasn't a scavenging, you know, roadkill kind of thing. That owl was like, wait, I just got this. Why are you bugging me?
Lee from Wilmington called in and said, I have never seen coyotes in the area, but I have seen red foxes and owls, and even in the daylight. Is it unusual to see owls in daylight hours?
You know, I've seen owls early in the mornings and then as well as like dusk time. You know, if you go out to different parts that are a little bit less noisy from, you know, construction, you can hear owls calling until 8 o'clock in the morning. So even I had some students out this past semester, and we were at Ev Henwood in Brunswick County, and we were laughing because we had barred owls calling back and forth to each other.
How do they sound?
They ask, who's cooking for you?
can you imitate it for us, Rachel Urbana? I'm totally putting you on the spot.
You are.
Okay, sorry.
It sounds like who's cooking for you, if you can imagine that. It does sound like that. I can't. I'm not a good person to do that.
That's fair. But that's not what we called you on the show.
Yeah. But we also actually, when I had students out, even later in the morning, when I was explaining how to do some of these field experiments with them, I saw them all looking up at one point, and there was right above our heads a barred owl, and it was just resting in the tree. So, I mean, that's fine. Like we said, you know, these animals have to rest at some place, and if you're lucky enough to see them when you're awake, that's an exciting experience, and you shouldn't be nervous about it. Just don't go and chase them.
Dan from Winnebo called in with the million-dollar question. This is the one that we get every time we do an animal show. Here it is. Do panthers exist in this area? Dan says, I've seen tons of coyotes and foxes here.
As far as I know, no.
Which is what all the researchers say. Yeah. And yet we've got people who will swear that they've seen them, especially around Orton Plantation.
We have bobcats. And I know a lot of people mistake bobcats sometimes for panthers or cougars or whatever you want to call them. You know, they're two very different organisms, but a lot of people have never seen a bobcat because they are very cryptic animals. They're very elusive, that they just really don't like being around people.
Are they nocturnal, bobcats?
They are nocturnal, but again, you can see them during the day. The very first time I ever saw a bobcat was about 7:30 in the morning, and I was going to my car, and I was like drinking my coffee, and I'm like, oh.
Was this in Wilmington?
This was in Illinois.
Okay.
And I was like, that's a cat. That's a big cat. And then I was like, took a sip of my coffee. I was like, that's a really big cat. you know, so I think a lot of people might confuse seeing a bobcat potentially with thinking it's a panther because they don't realize how large bobcats can be.
Can bobcats really, because when I think of a bobcat, I think of a cat that's much larger than, say, what we think of as a domestic feline, but smaller still than what I would think of as a panther or a cougar. Now, are panthers and cougars, is that an interchangeable designation?
Yep, they're the same thing.
Okay.
You can call them panthers, cougars, catamounts, pumas.
Okay.
I call them Nittany lions. But you're right.
Can bobcats get close to their size?
No. Okay. The biggest that a bobcat will get is the size of a medium-sized dog, if you want to put it that way. You know, they're very muscular. They got long legs, but they're not going to get nearly as big as a cougar.
And Dave from Brunswick Forest also called in and asked about black panthers. He says, my wife thinks she saw one. Dave, I wonder what time of day or night that would have been. I wonder, is it easier to confuse a bobcat with a black panther if you're seeing a silhouette at night?
If you see a silhouette at night, I know a lot of people that have worked with cougars that they, you know, especially out in the Midwest where they're really starting to repopulate, and they get tons of pictures in saying this is a cougar, and it's like, no, it's probably a domestic cat, or it's a bobcat, and it's a matter of size comparison. So mm-hmm. oftentimes when people see, and this can be anybody including myself as a professional, the first time you see something, or if you see something really quick, your mind wants to tell you one thing of what it is. Unless you have a really good view on it, or you have a size comparison, then if you only get a quick glance of it, it's easy to kind of think you might have seen it, especially if, you know, you want to see one. Sometimes people will be like, oh, no, I do believe that they're here and they want to see one. But I've never seen one, and until I see some hard evidence, like I actually see one or know somebody that's credible that sees one, I'll have to say that I don't think they exist here.
You're listening to Coastline. We're looking at the Cinnabarization of wild mammals in the Cape Fear region, answering your questions on this Thursday. Rachel Urbanek, she's a certified wildlife biologist and assistant professor of wildlife ecology in UNCW's Department of Environmental Sciences. You can call us with your close encounters at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Dave from Brunswick Forest also says, we've seen coyotes and deer eat our pepper plants. Is that surprising to you that they would go after pepper plants?
No, especially coyotes, because they're omnivores, which means that they'll eat all sorts of different things. Deer are probably going more after the leaves, especially if they're growing a garden. They're probably eating a little bit of everything, especially if they're fertilizing their garden. So for a deer, a fertilized garden in terms of the leaves are going to be really great nutrition for them. And they actually, believe it or not, deer can be very selective. And so if they happen to nip a pepper plant, like an actual pepper, I'd be surprised. It'd be by accident. Because sometimes people try to put pepper spray on their plants, like the leaves, to deter deer. Coyotes, on the other hand, they'll eat a lot of different things. And so that doesn't surprise me. They like a lot of fruits and berries. And so they might take their hand at a pepper.
Eric from Wilmington says, where the expansion of military cutoff is happening, I'm seeing a lot more deer and even a couple of foxes. Do you know the status of these populations? Are they doing well? How are white-tailed deer? When we mention deer, is that all that we're talking about, white-tailed deer here?
That's all we're talking about here.
Okay.
Right. The only other deer that we have are mule deer, and they live out west. So in terms of white-tailed deer, that's all we've got here in North Carolina. Deer are doing fine. You know, they've come back from the 1900s from great restoration efforts by our Wildlife Resource Commission and biologists. You know, they are a regular harvested animal, so our commission wouldn't allow any harvest, so taking of any animal, unless the populations were doing well. And so they're doing just fine. The reason why you're probably seeing more fox and deer in that area, and then I know in different other areas people are popping up saying, oh, I've never seen this, and we're seeing all these sorts of wild animals, is because of development. So they were hanging out in those plots of lands and you just didn't see them. And now that there's no trees and there's no habitat, then you're going to see them because they're trying to find a new place.
Zach writes, we've seen a number of foxes in the past few years. The first, a couple of years ago, it was licking a puddle after some rain one night in Forest Hills. The next was in our backyard off 23rd Street. That's in Wilmington. Then my mother-in-law spotted a fox and her kits living in a ditch in Longleaf Hills. Unfortunately, they attacked her chickens, so some of them were rounded up. So It sounds like the fox sightings are, I mean, this is anecdotal, of course, but mm-hmm. almost as prolific as coyotes.
Well, they're both doing well. So again, coyotes can be hunted year-round in North Carolina, so they're doing that well. Foxes can be trapped each season, which is the beginning of December through the end of February. So again, what we know in terms of how these populations are doing is that they're stable enough that people can harvest them for their fur and for their meat. So, you know, they are doing well in this area.
Amy writes, could you ask the professor if Kai wolves are in the Cape Fear area? And it looks like a combination of coyote and wolf. Is that what she's talking about? Do those exist?
Yeah, most people pronounce it as a koi wolf.
Okay, so like, that's what it looks like.
It does look, because it looks like the word koi, but, you know, Kai for coyote. Not that I'm aware of. We have no wolves down here. The only wolves that we have are that experimental population up in the northeastern part of North Carolina. And up there, there are hybridizations between coyotes and wolves. That's part of one of the setbacks of trying to get that population of wolves back and kind of reestablishing them, is that they are breeding and producing offspring with coyotes. Down here, I'm not aware of anything like that. It would have to have been one that left that area and came all the way down here, which I think is probably very unlikely based on the different landscapes they have to traverse, and hunters and trappers and cars and roads. So we probably don't have any koi wolves here.
And we are going to get into that red wolf question, because it seems like a knotty one. But first, you sort of casually dropped something about how these animals are coming more into backyards and urban areas because there's more food around for them, including bird feeders and birdseed. I'm sure many of our listeners don't think about putting out birdseed as feeding wild animals that they shouldn't be feeding. Can you speak to that a little bit?
You know, I like bird feeders. We've got a few at our house just because we like to see birds. But this is one of those things for me as an urban wildlife biologist, I tend to try to kind of weigh the pros and cons for. So we can kind of talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I'm going to get you to expand on that. I think that's an important point. It's a look at wild mammals in the Cape Fear region and how humans might deal with more human-wildlife interactions. UNCW's Rachel Urbanek is with us today and answering your questions. Are there specific wild mammals that you've wondered about in your backyard? Give us a call and tell us about it on this Thursday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from this break, more of your questions and comments. We'll hear from Sarah from Wilmington. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, it's a bird's eye view of the wild mammal population in the Cape Fear region. Rachel Urbanek is an assistant professor of wildlife ecology at UNCW. She's also a certified wildlife biologist, and she is in the midst of a citizen survey on coyotes. She's also working with the State Wildlife Commission on the red and gray fox populations. We want to hear from you on this Thursday. What wild mammals have you seen in your neighborhood? You can reach us at 910-343-1138 or at coastline@whqr.org. This is the last segment, so just a few minutes left to get your question or comment in. Before we went to break, Rachel Urbanek, you were talking about how bird feeders can be an attractant for animals other than birds. Tell us about that. What other animals might get drawn into somebody's backyard because they have prolific amounts of birdseed thrown around?
You know, well, certainly white-tailed deer will come up and eat some birdseed. Squirrels, I think most people have seen squirrels come to bird feeders to their dismay, because they usually empty the whole bird feeder out. But raccoons love birdseed. Gray foxes will come up, red foxes, coyotes. So
you could be attracting coyotes into your backyard if you have a lot of birdseed.
If you've got a lot of birdseed out there, I mean, they'll come up and eat that. You know, for coyotes and raccoons and foxes, they'll come for birdseed. But I think probably you know, the biggest thing for people to know is having pet food outside. Some people who want to keep their cat food outside or their dog food, I mean, that's just a bowl for them, for any animal to come up and eat out of. But there are ways of having bird feeders that kind of help reduce those interactions and still be able to feed some birds. You can have ones that reduce the amount of bird seed that actually falls out of it. So birds actually have to kind of perch onto it and peck seeds out of it rather than just having a pile of bird seed out there. You know, suet containers are usually pretty good. But, you know, raccoons and gray foxes, they can climb trees. So raccoons and them and gray foxes can easily get to them even if they're just hanging in trees too. And then we do have some occasional black bears. So we've had one just recently spotted near Airlie Gardens, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago.
What do black bears eat?
Oh, they're omnivores too. So they really like fruits, fruits and vegetables. So they like grubs, so they'll eat a lot of bugs and things of that nature. But they love bird seed, too.
Will they eat people?
Black bears will generally not eat people.
Will they eat people's animals?
No. I don't know of any occasions, especially on the East Coast, of black bears eating any people's animals or people. You know, certainly there are attacks of black bears and grizzly bears out west, but it's not necessarily usually trying to eat people. It's for protection of their young or territory.
Sarah from Wilmington asks, does the availability of wild prey in urban areas have a measurable effect on the number of attacks on pets? Would a large population of rabbits, mice, frogs, insects, or other small prey decrease the number of attacks on people's pets or just attract a larger predator population and increase attacks on pets?
That's a really great question.
Yeah.
So right off, my instinct is to say that having a larger native prey base is going to reduce it. Whether that actually would happen, would have to wait and see. But certainly, wild animals are going to be wanting to hunt in more natural areas away from humans, and humans are where the pets are. So if they can find enough prey items in more natural areas, then theoretically, you should have less depredation or attacks on pets.
Now, speaking of attacks on pets, there was a conversation here in preparation for this show this morning. Someone was talking about how he's seen coyotes in his neighborhood and he's very happy about that. And this is, I think, the Forest Hills area in Wilmington. He's happy about that because he says the feral cat population has just about disappeared. So we asked, how do you know the feral cat population has disappeared? And he said, we see lots of missing cat signs posted around the neighborhood. So then, of course, our response is, those probably aren't feral cats. Those are people's pets. So I guess a couple of things here. We need to define how as a wildlife biologist, what you consider a feral cat to be. And are coyotes depleting the cat population, feral or otherwise, if they're outside?
So feral in general for wildlife means that it's an organism that was once domesticated and then is now, like, it's having offspring and the offspring are surviving in the wild. So a cat that was abandoned or left its owner's house and then had offspring, those offspring would then be feral. But there's a really blend of terminology. You can have stray cats that were abandoned that can act more on the feral side because they want to be away from humans, whether they were mistreated. And then we've got people who have free-ranging domestic cats, ones that they let outside, that they are their pets, but they let outside every day or, you know, they take care of. But they aren't necessarily a house cat that are inside. And so with cats, it's really in particular hard to define one thing because you have to define it in terms of any kind of study saying this is exactly what we're looking at. So in terms of coyote relationships with that, coyotes don't know any of those definitions. Cats are a great size prey item for coyotes. And on a wildlife note, you know, they're both invasive species in terms of they're not native to North Carolina.
You mean so, the feral cat population?
Well, outdoor
or the,
cats in general.
Cats in general.
Cats,
yeah.
Outdoor cats in general.
Yeah.
And so, you know, probably what your colleague is talking about is seeing a lot less outdoor cats, whether they're pets or whether they're cats that are owned. Only the people who are actually missing their pets is an issue, or is, you know, in terms of saying whether or not they can say it's their cat. Now, with our coyotes and our different populations of wildlife that are staying here in Wilmington, for both people's cats and dogs, it's prudent that you should be taking care of your pets and making sure that you're keeping an eye on them, knowing that these animals are around. People with fences, if they think coyotes might be coming into their backyard and only their cat or their dog stay in their backyard, then making their fence and yard a little bit more coyote-proof would help kind of alleviate some of those issues. Ways to do that is not have food out back, right? So not having cat food or dog food, having fences that they make kind of like roller bars you can put on the top so that a coyote kind of can't get a good grip on it. It doesn't mean that they can't get over it, but it kind of deters them a little bit.
It's harder. They might roll off the other way.
They might roll off the other way. But then coyotes are really good digging too. So then you've got to be able to dig several inches underground and kind of bury fence material there too if you really want to protect your animals. But honestly, the best way is if you're going to go outside, just keep an eye on them just like you would your child and, you know, just make sure that you're out there with them.
So are you saying that people should keep their cats inside?
My personal opinion is that cats should be inside. They aren't native at all to the United States. And a lot of wildlife biologists feel this way. There's been plenty of research from in Virginia and in Georgia and Florida and Illinois, and I know even in the Raleigh area, on what outdoor cats do to our native wildlife, particularly our birds. Anybody who has a cat, you know, knows that they'll bring back prizes. And the biggest thing that sticks out is that that's only about a quarter of what they actually kill when they're out there.
Stephen from Pender County called and said, one night I had to fight off a red fox. Unfortunately, he got a hold of my cat and she didn't make it. I had to call animal control to take care of him. He says he fought the fox off with a flashlight. And Brian from Hampstead called in and said, I have definitely seen a Black Panther in my area. So the Black Panther debate rages on. Vince asks, skunks. I've lived in this area for 22 months, and I have yet to see or smell a skunk. Are there many in this area, or am I just lucky?
I'm with him on there. I've lived in this area for 3 years now and have yet to smell a skunk or see a skunk. So I actually asked our state fur bearer biologist about this last time I saw her, and she told me that they just really aren't that many at all skunks in New Hanover County. So that was one of those species, again, that just wasn't, you know, here, you know, after the 1900s, and they're just slowly making their way back. So
you're listening to Coastline. We're talking about wild animals in urban areas in the Cape Fear region. Answering your questions on this Thursday, Rachel Urbanek. She's a certified wildlife biologist and assistant professor of wildlife ecology at UNCW. You can call us for just a few more minutes on this Thursday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Rudy from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, I'd like your guests to comment on otters in the area and the population and their habitat. I live on Whiskey Creek, and this morning saw a pair of adult otters with a couple of pups, and I'd like to comment on what the population is.
That's a really interesting question, Rudy. Otters, do we see those around here very much?
I actually haven't seen any otters. I've seen dolphin, and I've heard some of my graduate students have seen manatees, but I haven't seen any otters. That doesn't mean that I haven't been out on the water as much as other people. And I can't really comment in terms of what the population of otters is doing in North Carolina. I know that NC State, there's some graduate students that are working on diseases with otters with the Wildlife Resource Commission. But I don't really know what's going on with otters in our state, unfortunately.
I want to get back to this idea of coexisting peacefully with wildlife in urban areas. The city of Wilmington and New Hanover County, and Brunswick County for that matter, have consistently identified green spaces and parks as a priority for stakeholders. And that's something that has been worked toward and held high as a goal. How do you think we're doing here in terms of are we preserving the right kinds of green spaces?
Yeah, I think that New Hanover County is doing a really great job in terms of providing green spaces and parks for humans. What I would love to see is a little bit more parks for animals and humans alike to coexist. One that the county and New Hanover County just opened, I guess recently would be the right word, would be Pages Creek in the Middle Sound Loop area. And that's kind of more of what I'm talking about in terms of natural areas, not necessarily sports complexes or playgrounds, which we need and are great, and the county has done a great job on that, but areas that people can kind of connect to. In fact, there's actually a small wetland complex right across from Hugh McRae Park that most people don't even know about, and it's got a nice little trails in there. So I personally would like to see a lot of that going on, more of that kind of growth. And then with that, kind of going back to one of the other listeners' questions, is that if those lands need to be managed, then we can't just say, okay, we're putting aside green space and everything will be fine for the wildlife. We need to manage that habitat. So with encroaching urban areas, we need to make sure that native plant species are still staying there.
What kinds of native plant species are we concerned about?
Oh, well, certainly we want our pines still to be here, but I'm definitely not a plant biologist, okay. So I will not even go down that route in terms of specific ones. But, you know, there's invasive and native plant species everywhere, and certainly a plant biologist would be able to go off and tell you many things in terms of what we're fighting here in New Hanover County. But, you know, our native landscape needs to be burned periodically, and so the Nature Conservancy does a good job on some properties with that throughout the county, but I'm not sure how much that goes on in terms of the green spaces for our county parks. You know, and then the eventually, at some point, wildlife will have to be managed as we continue urbanization in this area. You know, if we don't have enough people hunting or trapping, then it becomes a refuge, which is on one hand good because we get lots of animals. But on the other hand, then we might see some starvation or illnesses that the populations need to be reduced a little.
Common in white-tailed deer, for instance, and there are communities around the country that handle that in different ways. Mm-hmm. Some have professional sharpshooters come in. Bald Head Island instituted a deer birth control mm-hmm. program. Is that likely to take hold?
The birth control program?
Yes. I mean, is that something that is gaining popularity around the country, or is this just a privileged community that can afford to do something like that?
There are several places around the country that have been using that birth control. It's called Gonicon is the trademark name. And to be honest, Bald Head Island is probably, of all the places that I do know are doing this, is probably the most ideal spot because it's – I know that there is now a land connection from the mainland to it, but it's very small. And so something like fertility control can work if it's – a closed-off population and there's not many deer or any at all coming back in. It is extremely expensive and a lot of labor because you have to, it is birth control, so you have to keep on providing this fertility treatment to the deer every year, which presents a lot of challenges. For an area like New Hanover County, I don't think that would be reasonable fiscally, because it'd be a lot of money, but then we have so much movement of deer moving in and out of the county that it wouldn't make a dent.
Andrea says, I have seen black deer on Blue Clay Road.
Black deer?
Do you know what? I haven't heard of black deer, but I'm not a biologist. is that?
I have never heard of a black deer. We have black-tailed deer out west, but when I hear a black deer, I think of a black deer.
All right. That's this edition of Coastline. Professor Rachel Urbanek, what a pleasure having you here today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Coastline's technical director is Rachel Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Rachel Hanrahan. Rachel DeVries is our webmaster. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org. Get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.